Hello, and welcome into another edition of the World Football Index South American Football Show. On this week's show, we will be recapping round 14 of the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers, going through all the storylines from that. A big, big night for a lot of nations in those qualifiers, as well as taking a bit of a bigger picture World Cup view and taking a peek at what all has gone down and who could end up in the World Cup. Joining me on this week's show, we have Adam Brandon down in Chile. Adam, how are you this evening?
Hello, Austin. I'm good, thank you. And thanks very much for stepping in tonight and hosting again.
Happy to. Got to keep the show running somehow. It's great fun. Love chatting with all of you guys. The pre-pods, the post-pods, all of it makes for a good experience. So looking forward to it. Also on this week, we have Simon Edwards in Medellin, Colombia. Simon, a big 6 points for Colombia in this window. I assume that has you feeling pretty well.
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks very much. Happy to see Colombia back on track. Things were looking a bit dodgy. Lucky win last week. Good, better win this week. So things are much more positive down here in Colombia.
Where things may not be so positive coming in today, we have Nico down in Argentina joining us. Nico, Argentina got the win against Chile, as we'll get into. Not a great performance in La Paz against Bolivia. I assume that has you not doing too well today?
Yeah, well, got the win. It's only a kind way of saying things. And we got lucky, got away with it. And, in Bolivia, things just resulted in the way everyone was expecting them to. So we worried, and I'm doing good, actually. I'm a bit sad, but it's just a part of being an Argentinian fan these days.
Well, I'm glad that you yourself are doing well, though your national team may not be joining in. Nico, I will stay with you because we are going to start our coverage tonight with that match in La Paz, Argentina falling 2-0 to Bolivia, a more recognizable Bolivia side, I think it's fair to say, after some changes were made for that trip to Barranquilla to play Colombia. Pablo Escobar returned to the squad, Alejandro Trumacero, some of the more bigger names were there, Juan Carlos Arce as well. Arce and Marcelo Martins Moreno scored the two goals for Bolivia. It was a 2-0 win. Nico, what did you think of Argentina's performance? The biggest storyline, of course, Lionel Messi gets the 4-game suspension. So how about you walk us through that suspension first, and then let me know what you thought of Argentina's performance here against Bolivia.
Well, it was a surprise in the beginning. We weren't expecting that. We all saw the insult. We all saw the incident. But we weren't expecting Messi to be sanctioned with 4 matches. It was, in my opinion, a bit too much. So some kind of a fishy situation going on there, something shady. Messi gets sanctioned hours before the match, and Bielsa has to change all the mindset, all the tactics, and that ended up affecting the performance. Anyway, we must highlight the intelligence by the Bolivian side, because they set up a team almost built entirely by players set in La Paz. Their manager did some interesting overhauls to the team, calling up Moreno, who plays in the second division in China. Turned it up well for him. I don't know what to say, really. We're expecting a tough match, but in the end, it was all very different, and we panicked, and we couldn't deal with the Bolivian side without Messi, and that was demonstrated once again.
Nico, the stats are pretty clear on Argentina with and without Messi. Firstly, do you think there's a chance that this ban could be reduced? I know there's been talk that maybe it would go down to a 2-match ban in which he would only miss one more match. Or do you think that Argentina are probably going to be without him for 4 matches? And what does that do for their eventual qualification hopes?
Well, I think that this sanction could effectively be reduced. I mean, these sanctions are only designed to scare the infractor. The new governing body at the AFA has just been chosen, and one of the main objectives will be to reduce Messi's sanction. I think that talks are already being held with the authorities at FIFA. Regarding your other question, I think it will be very difficult to qualify for the World Cup without Messi. Uruguay in Montevideo obviously will be difficult, but I think that one, we could get the 3 points out of that one. However, I am worried about the other two matches. Peru, who seem like giant slayers these last matches. Ecuador, who have been really good during the first period of the qualifiers. They're not looking that good now, but they're always dangerous. So we'll have to see. But I think that Messi's sanction could be reduced, and that will help us. Otherwise, we are doomed to missing the World Cup, in my opinion.
I think Argentina have to look at trying to be 3 points clear, at least 3 points clear of Ecuador heading into that last round of fixtures. But maybe we'll discuss that a little bit more towards the end of the show as to who we think will be heading to Russia. Just to go back to the Messi sanction, I think 4 games is a little bit harsh. Obviously, as a Chile fan, I was quite pleased to see it, as it certainly boosts Chile's chances of qualifying. But yeah, I felt 4 games probably a little bit excessive. But I think 2 games is probably fair for the offensive language that he used. But maybe the extra 2 games is for Argentina's performance against Chile the other day. And with Messi captain, maybe it's FIFA decided to punish that god-awful performance with another 2-game ban.
You had your rant on that. That was last week's show, and you brought it back in. Adam, I think...
I'm still not over it.
Understandably so. I think I agree with you that the 4 matches seems a bit harsh. But for me, the surprising thing was the fact that CONMEBOL and FIFA and the powers that be did anything at all. You know, for a player of this magnitude, for a country of this magnitude, I was just shocked that they had done anything to Messi, be it 4 matches, 2 matches, 1 match. I really didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. There was great surprise here in Chile to that when it happened. people can believe it, really. What was the reaction in Colombia to it, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, there was a surprise. I mean, for me, the striking thing was I've seen some things on TV and people going, oh, well, CONMEBOL, they've obviously got a vendetta against Argentina. It's like, why? Why? What? And obviously, on the face of it, you think 4 games, that is very harsh for something. You know, it seems a lot, it seems excessive. But, I've seen commentators in England and in the US going, ah, well, they obviously want to, you know, get Messi out of it. They want a handicap against Argentina. It's like, why? I've seen so many awful Messi challenges that have gone unpunished, and I've seen so many bits and pieces. And again, I'm not saying that they're necessarily in favour of Argentina, but to suggest that there's some sort of vendetta or some sort of bias against Argentina and against the most high profile, the guy who's going to sell the most tickets, who's going to get everybody watching TV from the federation, seems very, very strange. So while I think it is excessive, I think these conspiracy theories seem very strange to me as well. You know, why? why would CONMEBOL not want Messi involved? And again, maybe they're setting a example from a high profile player, but everything I've seen from the officials, from many decisions, have been the opposite. They want to get the high-profile players on the pitch and keep them on the pitch as much as possible. So I think some of the reaction seems a bit baffling to suggest that there's some bias against Messi or against Argentina.
Well, and I think we've seen referee issues kind of come to the forefront here, at least in this part of the world. We had the Mexican referee strike a couple weeks back that washed out a round of the Mexican League. And so I think there's maybe a bit of a heightened awareness to these player official issues. And so when something like this comes up, I think kind of as you said, Simon, there's a chance to really make an example of this and make a statement with a punishment like this to a player of Messi's magnitude. And I think in some sense, you have to give credit where credit is due for that, because it's not an easy decision to make. You know, it's difficult to take probably the most talented player in the world out of matches and put his country at risk of missing the World Cup. And as you said, Simon, this Argentina side's incredibly marketable. So to have them out of the World Cup, you know, that's not something that you have to do, that you can do lightly. So I think credit needs to be due for the fact that, as I said, there was really a punishment at all in this situation. Back to the match at hand here. Anybody want to comment on the Bolivians? As Nico said, they set up their team. They knew exactly kind of what they wanted to do.
Yeah, I think, well, it was a really poor quality match. The commentators here certainly agreed with that viewpoint as well. I don't know what you guys think, but Bolivia's like key men, you know, the strongest duo of Pablo Escobar and Alejandro Chamorro. They've been excellent for the strongest in the Copa Libertadores this year, as we've mentioned quite a few times on the pod, and they're usually pretty solid performance for the national team as well. But, you know, neither of them had a particularly good game in this one. In fact, the ball control throughout by, you know, world-class players on the Argentina side and and some decent players on both sides was really appalling. There was a couple of good chances for Di Maria in the first half, but I think he burnt himself out. He didn't quite appear as much in the second half. The second half saw Argentina attempt to play a bit more. I think that their first half tactics, where they tried to play a kind of very direct on the counter attack, wore them out. It was just a mad tactic in La Paz. I think if you go to La Paz and you want to win there, you've got to have long spells of possession and make Bolivia work and save energy. But the way Argentina were playing, you know, I think they knackered themselves out in that first half, really.
No, I would say, yeah, it was a very end-to-end game. I mean, the crowd in Bolivia as well, you can tell the fans stood up like, here we go, this is going to be fun. The big stars turn up in La Paz and it goes one of two ways. Either the visiting team, again, keep possession, you know, play their way, take control of the game, quiet down the crowd, and often that is how you get the job done. But I agree with you, Argentina were playing into Bolivia's hands completely. It was a game low on quality, as you say, a game low on control. It was very end-to-end, very exciting in that regard, and it really got the fans behind it. You know, both teams had chances, and it took away the technical advantage of some of the Argentinian players by playing that kind of direct end-to-end football, which, you know, I think Di Maria was one of the players who stood out as providing something a little bit different, but it was a really poor game. And the Argentinian defending, wow, I mean, I'm sure Nico can tell you as well, but for me, they were shocking. And again, I mentioned before the pod started, Sergio Romero in goal. Why don't you get Franco Armani? He's the best goalkeeper in South America for me at the moment, playing in South America. It's crazy for me that Argentina haven't given him a go, especially when he's being outjumped by Arce, the tiny Bolivian player who outjumped two Argentinian defenders and the goalkeeper to head home. And then the second goal with Martins, who was wide, wide open. And I think Romero looked to jump out of the way. Again, he was at the edge of the six-yard box and it was a powerful shot. But he definitely wasn't a big presence, which I think is one of Romero's biggest shortcomings, is that he doesn't have a big presence, a big personality in the goal. You know, he makes the occasional good stops, but for me, yeah, get Franco on the phone before he becomes a Colombian.
And Nico, for you, you know, there's a lot there. We can talk a bit about the tactics of Argentina. What did you make of how Edgardo Bauza set up his side, and then the poor defending that we saw from this Argentine team, and that was what ultimately led to their demise here.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to say that to me, it was a perfect storm for Argentina. A very hurt side came up against a Bolivian side which had nothing to lose before, I don't know, how many was it? 40,000, 50,000 people. So it was due to happen, especially with the way that the national team has been playing in these last couple of matches. It has not been good. Regarding the formation, I think that Bauza's 4-4-2 could work, but it's not working. He's not doing things well. Defense, he tried many new people. Played Rojo as a right back. He's been playing as a center back. Then Pizarro did his own work. I think he was the best in the team. Romero had a terrible match. And then, well, the attacking line had not the best of days, especially with Prato missing a couple of sitters. Di Maria was one of the best in the team, and that is, I think, because he had way more space than he did against Chile. And that was one of the things highlighted by the press just before the match, that this could have been Di Maria's redemption as one of the best players in the national team. It was close to being, but it clearly wasn't.
One final thing from me on this match before we move on. I think it was very clear from the outset that coming into this window, Bolivia had this match circled. We saw the squad that they sent to Colombia. We saw the 11 that they chose when they got there. This was the match that Bolivia wanted to win. They spared some players in that Colombia match, and give them credit for that. They are spoilers in this competition. They've been outside of the World Cup for a very long time. It's been clear that they're not going to Russia. But give them credit for playing their part here. And there's a lot of South American nations, Adam, that are going to be very, very pleased by this result.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think we called it on the pod, didn't we, the other day? Bolivia would beat Argentina. It just felt all set up for it, really. Like you say, you know, they rested players against Colombia. That awful performance from Argentina against Chile. Bowser's incompetence. It was the perfect recipe for a Bolivia win. Like I say, you know, Bolivia didn't even really play that well, but they still managed to win 2-0. Remarkable, really. I think another game Bolivia will have circled, of course, is the one against Chile, which is coming up in a couple of match days' time. So at the start of September, I'm hoping to go across to La Paz for that one, actually, if I can afford it and get the time off work. But that should be a fascinating match because Chile have won 2-0, I think, in their last three or four World Cup qualifying visits to La Paz. So Chile have a great record in La Paz. And I think you'll see a Chile side looking to dominate the game, dominate the ball for 90 minutes there. I'd be surprised if Bolivia have the sort of joy they did against Argentina, against a more sort of tactically intelligent side in Chile.
It is intriguing to see these teams, and we've got two of them in Bolivia and Venezuela who are long gone from this World Cup, probably building towards the next one, and still the roles that they can play in these World Cup qualifiers. And as you saw here, you know, Bolivia had a big impact, and Bolivia and Venezuela both could still have big impacts going down the stretch. We'll move to our next match. Was a 2-0 win for Colombia in Quito against Ecuador. That makes it 6 points from this international break for Colombia. And as Simon said, 6 massive points coming in. They were looking a bit dodgy. Now coming out, they're sitting second in the table. Still just 2 points clear of that playoff spot, but they are in second place. Simon, this was a big result for Colombia, and it was a much more impressive performance than what we saw against Bolivia.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously against Bolivia, it was a specific set of challenges. It was very clear from the outset that Colombia were going to have to break down a team set out to defend. They didn't do it particularly well. They didn't move the ball particularly well. They kind of rushed the attacking play. This game, again, coming into it, I kind of thought that Colombia may be a little bit more impressive just in regards to the fact that Ecuador are more likely to attack and Colombia would then have space and opportunities to counterattack. That did play into it, but I think overall Ecuador were disappointing and Colombia were much more impressive than they have been. So the team, I mean, they had clearly picked a very attacking formation against Bolivia, knowing that they were going to dominate possession. Here against Ecuador, I think they probably picked more or less the strongest players they have. One of the issues Peckerman has had is he's rotated a lot and he's tried to respond to the opposition. So he's used a lot of players. He's actually used 15 different forward players so far in qualifying. Everyone from Felipe Paro, who plays in Greece, to Fabian Castillo in the US, you know, Falcao, Baca, Muriel, Teofilo Gutierrez, Jackson Martinez, Miguel Buja, Adrian Ramos, Marlos Moreno, Roger Martinez, Orlando Berrio, Jonathan Copete, Duván Zapata, and Luis Quiñones. So if you're Colombian and you're a forward and you haven't played for the national team, then you're doing something wrong, because he's basically tried everything. And Colombian forwards haven't scored now in one calendar year. The last time Colombia scored was Carlos Bacca a year ago. So they've tried a lot of different things for Colombia, especially in the holding midfield roles and in the forward positions. But I think what they went for against Ecuador is probably Colombia's strongest team, more or less. So they had Zapata and Jerry Mina. Jerry Mina is incredible and just getting better and better and better. Amazing. He's very likely to be at Barcelona in the near future. At fullbacks, they had Santi Arias, who had an excellent game against Ecuador, very, very good from playing at PSV. And Farid Diaz, who had kind of dropped off a little bit for Nacional, but had a good game today. In front of them, Carlos Sanchez, who's a destroyer. If you've seen him for Aston Villa, you have no idea what he's capable of, because he is often Colombia's best player. He was playing alongside Abel Aguila, who's moved back to Colombia. A solid option, played well. And then they have James Rodriguez, Cuadrado, and Edwin Cardona playing behind Miguel Borja. So I think this is Colombia's strongest team, and they played very well. Both goals came down the left wing. The first one was an excellent cross by Miguel Borja. Borja didn't score, but his link-up play was good. He had the pace, he had the strength, and with the first goal, he picked the ball up on the left, stood the defender up, nothing seemed to be on. Outside of the foot, curled cross, just dropped in the 6-yard box, James forced it in with maybe his elbow or stomach or head or I don't know. He kind of slid it into the goal and it bounced off somewhere in his upper half of his body to put Colombia 1-0 up. Second goal was similar. It was a little scooped through ball by Edwin Cardona down the left. James Rodriguez squared and then Cuadrado touched it in. Quite a similar goal, but I think that was a good performance from Colombia. I like Edwin Cardona as the third attacking midfielder with Cuadrado and James. He's very good at shooting for range. He's a bit more creative. He's strong. He's confident. For me, he's probably the best option. Often, Peckerman goes for the pace and directness, but Cardona's provides something slightly different to Cuadrado on the other side. So, yeah, overall, Colombia, an excellent 6 points in two games. The atmosphere and the feeling in Colombia is much changed. There's a lot of optimism suddenly. But I think Ecuador definitely contributed to the result. Colombia could have got a couple more goals, but it was a good performance. And I think Colombia hopefully have now established their strongest 11. Miguel Borja, I think, deserves another chance. With Falcao coming back, that may or may not happen. Falcao's obviously on good form, but I think Borja's strength and pace gives a good option up front for Colombia. So suddenly everything's looking good again for Colombia.
And Adam, for Ecuador, this result really continues a downward spiral for them. As we said, we saw them get out so hot out of the gates in this qualification cycle, and they've really, really struggled. And now they find themselves in sixth place on just 20 points, 2 points out of that playoff spot. And it's been very, very difficult for them. They get no points from this window. Pressure's on Gustavo Quinteros. Pressure is really on this Ecuador side if they're going to try and make the World Cup.
Yeah, definitely is. But quite a few of us saw it coming. Quinteros' selections have been very suspect throughout the whole World Cup qualifying series. I think they did do well early on. And I remember reading at the time, I think, because they won 4 out of 4, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. So they had 12 points from a possible 12. And no side had ever failed to qualify from World Cup from that position in CONMEBOL. So it looks like Ecuador may well be the first. Certainly the percentages now aren't in their favour. I to be honest, I only saw the first half of this game, but what really struck me was that Colombia had control of the midfield. Ecuador badly missed Narboa in the middle of the park. Yeah, he's been playing well for Rostov in the last couple of years in Russia. And as Javier mentioned the other day, you know, he's kind of the cornerstone of this Ecuador side. He was missing through suspension. But yeah, Ecuador just they just don't seem to play with the energy that we usually associate with them in Quito. Yeah, usually they're like fly out the blocks. What was notable here is that, you know, they just never really got going. And once Colombia take hold of a game in midfield, it's very difficult to beat them. And yeah, the goals were strikingly similar. We discussed this pre-pod. I was trying desperately to think what the second goal was like and had to look it up, but it was actually pretty similar to the first. No, Simon, do you think that Pekerman maybe identified a weakness there?
Possibly. I mean, there were similarities and there were differences. The first one was Borja running into the channel, doing some good work, whereas the second one was a little bit more kind of a scoop through ball from further up the field. So there was slight difference in the way the game was set up. But again, yeah, I definitely think the Ecuador right back had gone missing for the second one. Yeah, whereas the first one, it was Borja. So I think it came from the same side. But I think there were slight differences in the way the build-up play for the two goals. So I'm not necessarily clear. I mean, I think Colombia were expecting, as you mentioned, more dangerous attacks from Ecuador, more pace, more directness. And there wasn't really that much coming from Ecuador. I mean, a couple of free kicks, which were well saved, were the kind of only two real first half chances that Ecuador had. They brought in the second half Marcos Caicedo and Gabriel Cortez, a couple of players we noticed from the Libertadores pod who were impressive. Nice to see Cortez's half black, half gold hair coming on. We'll be interested to see him getting a bit more time for Ecuador in the future. He's a very interesting player. But yeah. I mean, I think Colombia expected it to be more difficult, but I do think they played well. And I think there's some positive steps for Colombia. It's been clear for me for a while that they've got a good number of quality players. I think maybe the problem is they had too many good quality players and they just couldn't settle on a team. So I would hope Peckerman sticks with what he's got now. I think you're right, they did control the midfield. I think having two holding midfielders, getting the right combination there is important. Sanchez is now nailed on for one position. And there were so many options. Daniel Torres, Alex Mejia come back in, Barrios, Sebastián Pérez, they've all had a chance. But Aguila did well. He's an experienced guy. What you want from those two holding midfield players is discipline, is intelligence, and is, you know, competitiveness. So I think those two are a good fit. It means no place for my favourite Magnelli, but I'm very pleased that Magnelli didn't play away in Ecuador. That would have been a terrible decision because he doesn't run very much. So as nice as his passes are, I'm happy he wasn't selected for this one. But yeah, excellent result for Colombia away to Ecuador. Ecuador are dropping worryingly for them. We'll look at the way the table's fallen together at the end. Yeah, excellent for Colombia. Worrying for Ecuador, and looking more positive now.
Simon, I noticed that in the press, in the Colombian press before this game, the relations between kind of the Colombian media and the players didn't seem particularly healthy. There was pictures of like James Rodriguez kind of putting his middle finger up to them, and it generally seemed very tense. But you know, James, by the sounds of it, put in a performance to shut up the critics. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, the James middle finger to the press. I mean, obviously, for me, that's a complete non-story. You know, the press trying to take pictures of the players, I'd be annoyed as well. it sparked a ridiculous amount of controversy, really, for what it was. But most people's... It's one of those things where something happens and some people criticize it, and then the overwhelming response of criticizing the person who criticized it makes it seem bigger than it actually is. Like, why is this a story? And the whole story becomes people saying, why is this a story? But the other incident, which again is a little bit more understandably controversial, is Pablo Armero. Basically, he hadn't been in the Colombian team for a couple of years now, since before the 2014 World Cup. He's been playing regularly in Brazil, was brought back in for the Bolivia game in particular as an attacking fullback option, overlapping very well, played quite well. But there's been TV presenters in Colombia who've said he shouldn't be included because he hit his wife. There were some shocking photos that came out of her face, like heavily injured. Police were involved. He was actually arrested in the end. So there's been some people who have said he shouldn't be included in the national team for what he's done. Again, it's a difficult issue. But again, that combined with the James thing has given fuel to people who like to criticize. And in one regard, understandably, and in the other regard, making something out of nothing. So I think Armero doesn't necessarily merit a place in the team on his ability level. But it was a controversial one as well to choose somebody who has been recently involved in, an unsavory legal incident.
Simon, again, six big points for Colombia going forward. We'll move on now to a 3-1 win for Chile against Venezuela. Adam, I'll come to you. It was 3-1 for Chile, but this was a match that honestly legitimately could have finished 7 or 8-1 in favor of Chile. The fact that at the end there were even questions of how this match would finish was a bit odd given the way that Chile played. They were 3-0 up within 25 minutes. Venezuela got one back through Solomon Rondon, and then were able to apply a little bit of pressure at the end, but Chile was able to take it. A big 3 points coming off of that performance that, as you said, was a strong performance against Argentina, but did result in no points for Chile. This was a needed result. You've got to bank those home wins against nations like Venezuela, and Chile were able to do that, even if it didn't necessarily finish as impressively as it started.
No, like you say, your goal could have been anything, really. Certainly, Venezuela could have got more than one goal, but Chile should have got about 8 from the clear-cut chances they had. Yeah, so it could have been about 8-2 or 8-3 by the end of it. But yeah, Chile, records healed, records broken in this one. Chile back to their attacking best for an hour, and then to their defensive worst in like a mad 15-minute spell in the second half, where they looked like throwing it all away. Esteban Paredes, he broke a record by becoming the oldest ever scorer for Chile in a World qualifier. He got 2 goals. He turned 37 this year. He doesn't really do much. Well, he certainly does for Colo Colo, but in this Chile side anyway, it just seemed like his role was to play sort of an old traditional number nine role, kind of be a bit of a goal hanger, hang around the box, wait for a ball to come to him and get into the net. And that's exactly what he did. You know, had the knack of being in the right place at the right time, found himself with two easy tap-ins, both after great work from Alexis Sanchez. And we really have to mention Sanchez because he was on a different level last night. By far the best individual display I think we saw in the past week in these World Cup qualifiers. He gave the Venezuela defenders twisted blood for the full 90 minutes, really. He opened the scoring with a beautiful free kick, which hit the underside of the bar and bounced in. It kind of made like a pleasing clunk sound as well, which is always nice to hear. And yeah, after that, you know, two brilliant team goals, both kind of started by Sanchez, saw Chile go into a 3-0 lead. And I think at that stage, it was just only 25 minutes of the game gone. So it looked like Chile may go on and score plenty more. The fact they didn't, it was bordering on a miracle. Vidal actually apologised after the match for missing four chances, three of those absolute sitters. Eduardo Vargas, who's usually so reliable in front of goal for Chile, he missed a couple too. He hit the post with one effort. But yeah, Vargas actually in the last week, he was kind of very quiet against Argentina, I thought, and last night. But to be fair to him, he did work incredibly hard in both games and certainly wasn't doing himself a massive injustice or anything like that. In fact, just before Chile's second, Venezuela were looking a bit dangerous at that point and they were on the attack, and Vargas tracked back 70 yards to cut out across. And shortly after that, Chile mounted their own attack, which saw them go 2-0 up. Like I mentioned, a brilliant passing move. And yeah, and it just looked like Chile were going to see the game out comfortably. And then Venezuela had a free kick in the middle of the second half. Rondon, the ever dangerous Salomon Rondon of West Bromwich Albion, he headed Venezuela back in the game. And then a few minutes after that, Thomas Rincon hit a cracking shot that replay show that it probably just about crossed the line. But luckily for Chile, the linesman missed it, and Chile got away with that. Chile then had a penalty to go 4-1 up. Sanchez was given the responsibility to take it when he got his when he scored that free kick at the start of this match. It meant that he had equaled Marcelo Salas's record of being Chile's all-time top goal scorer. So if he had scored this penalty, he would surpass Salas's record. Just before it was taken, I'm sure you guys noticed on Twitter, I wasn't very happy about him taking it. I don't rate him as a penalty taker. I think we've seen at Arsenal where he rarely hits a clean one, and he's got away with quite a few poor ones. Even that one, the famous one, which won Chile the Copa America in 2015 on home soil. That was a very dodgy penalty, anyway, really. But yeah, he got away with it. But I just think it's madness from Chile, really, when they have Charles Arangues on the pitch, on the best penalty takers in the world, and not to use him in that situation. You know, just let him score, get it to 4-1, make sure the game's wrapped up. I think that's something for Pizzi to look at, as you know, goal difference could prove vital, and that kind of attitude, you could call it, of just giving it to whoever fancies it. I'm not a particular fan of that. I think the penalty taking role is a very important one in any team, and it should be, you know, for a player who really practices day in, day out. Yeah, so 4-0 Chile were majestic going forward. They should have scored more. And bravo, actually, Claudio Bravo, the much maligned Claudio Bravo, in the past few months, he had a pretty good game. Because like I say, Venezuela had chances of their own, but Bravo beat Murillo, the striker for Venezuela. He kept him out about three times on one-on-ones. So yeah, maybe Bravo goes back to Manchester City with his confidence restored a little bit. And the only other thing I want to mention about this game is that it's also today being sort of considered a success off the pitch. Chile were forced to move this game to a slightly smaller stadium in Santiago due to FIFA banning them from using the Estadio Nacional due to homophobic chanting over a number of games. Chile are kind of on a final warning. If it happens again, they probably have to play a game behind closed doors. Thankfully, last night, it passed off without any incident. And it was especially notable that in the other matches across the continent, you certainly could hear some of that kind of chanting. I know that it's been a discussion in Brazil today, for example. And also, what is notable, that ever since Chile made a huge campaign during the 2015 Copa America not to boo opposing national anthems, I haven't really heard hardly any booing of national anthems since then, where when Chile play away, you can never hear the Chile national anthem, and that goes for pretty much all the other teams as well. And that's something that apparently the different associations may get sanctioned on. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how FIFA review the fan footage, or the footage of the fans, I should say, and the reports of the fans across the continent in these two match days. Plenty of time to warn those respective FAs and get them to get their house in order, because Chile made a big effort. The Chilean FA, to be fair to them, made a big effort putting up signs, handing out leaflets to try and combat any kind of discriminatory chanting heading into this match. And it certainly worked, which is really good to see.
Certainly good to see indeed. Nico, for Venezuela, a disappointing performance. I was particularly impressed, though, by Wilker Fariñez, their very young goalkeeper. He's been a player that has caught my eye for a couple years now for Venezuela. Saw him with Caracas in the Libertadores preliminary round last year. Very young, just 19, gets the start for Venezuela, obviously with an eye towards 2022 from Rafael Dudamel. Made the penalty save on Alexis Sanchez. It was a good save. As Adam said, it wasn't a brilliant penalty, but Fariñez did have to go down to his right to make it. For you, Nico, what stood out in this match from either a Venezuelan or a Chilean perspective?
Well, I think that it's a pity that Venezuela will most likely miss the World Cup, because they have a very solid project going on with Dudamel, especially with their under-20s. But now going back to the main national team, I think that they played really good. And at some point during the match, they could have even won the match. Adam mentioned, that ball that hit the crossbar and then clearly went in. That would have changed the match, because it would have put things 3-2 with Chile under pressure, being battered by the Venezuelan attack. So I think that the Venezuelans have to be proud of what they did. It's not easy to play in that stadium against a rival which has got used to winning over the last couple of years. Venezuela definitely proved that they have something good going on, that they have done things very well, and that they obviously have some interesting talent in their goalkeeper, as well as Peñalanda Rondon, who has been very good for a couple of years now. And yeah, looking forward to seeing more of them, but unfortunately they'll miss the World Cup.
Yeah, and Josef Martinez, another player that has been impressive for Venezuela. He actually went out injured in their previous match.
Yeah, he went out injured, yes, yeah, because he was playing very well for Atlanta as well.
Yeah, he's going to miss some significant time for Atlanta United here in the MLS. But I've been impressed with Dudamel, with what I've seen from Venezuela. I think he certainly deserves time to build something. Again, as we've mentioned before, Venezuela, the only CONMEBOL side to have never qualified for the World Cup. But Simon, it does seem like Dudamel has a project there, and he's got some intriguing players, at least, that should keep him around for a while.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I quite like Peñaranda as well, the forward. I think, yeah, no, Venezuela are moving in the right direction. Obviously, it's always going to be difficult. They're in the South American qualifiers. If they were in Europe, I'm sure they would have qualified for something by now, playing against Andorra and so forth. But in South America, it really shows over the duration of the qualifying, over a number of years, so many games, so many competitive games, it really weeds out the best teams. So it's very difficult for a team to kind of break into that top five. But I think Venezuela definitely moving in the right direction. They're playing nice football. A few years ago, I mean, they went from being easy, you know, an easy game, guaranteed 3 points, to being a kind of awkward, competitive, tough team, to now being a team that, to then being a team which played some good football, but still a bit open in the back. I think they're kind of moving in the right direction. They're playing some better football. Obviously, they've now got a top striker in Solomon Rondon, which they can build around. You know, some interesting players. I think definitely they're getting more and more competitive every year. They're going to miss out this year a little bit further off than they were the last World Cup. But, you know, I think definitely generally the move is in the right direction. They've got some interesting, skillful players. And I think, yeah, young goalkeeper, good striker. Just need to work on the bit in between, but I think they're definitely moving in the right direction.
PC, the Chile manager, he mentioned in his post-match interview, actually, Venezuela were missing players such as Josef Martinez, but also Alejandro
Guerra.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, if those two were playing, I think this game may have even had a very different outcome. You know, if it's Josef Martinez on the end of those chances instead of Murillo, I think this game may have had a very different look. But Chile, like I said, played brilliantly going forward. Venezuela appalling at the back. If they are going to make a go at qualifying for the 2022 World Cup, my big doubt about them is their defence. And that's something that they're going to have to try and work on. They just concede far too many goals.
And they seem to concede at inopportune times as well, as we saw in that match against Peru last weekend when they were 2-0 up and then surrendered that back to 2-2 with a quick goal right after halftime and so on. But as we said, Dudamel seems to have them going in the right direction, and 2022 seems like a viable goal for them, and they have a project that at least they're working on. So should certainly give Venezuela credit for that. We'll move on then to the still high-flying Brazilians, with a 3-0 win against Paraguay, which was coupled with Peru's win against Uruguay. Brazil have officially become the first non-host team to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. It's now 8 competitive matches and 8 competitive wins for Chichi in charge of this Brazilian squad. For a couple international breaks now, there really wasn't any question about Brazil making the World Cup, which is bizarre to think of because exactly a year ago at this time, there was question as to whether Brazil could they actually possibly miss a World Cup. Now that question has been resoundingly answered. No, they've won 8 in a row and have conceded just twice in doing that. And they have a World Cup berth sealed, the first nation to do that. Adam, what did you make of this Brazil performance? 3-0, maybe not as high-flying or as impressive as what they were against Uruguay, but they were still pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, I think the first thing I want to point out with this one is the fantastic goals, really, you know? Two really great team goals and one brilliant individual effort from Neymar. He had to bounce back from basically missing an open goal and then a penalty. I know Dave was enjoying Neymar's misses greatly, but Neymar's a great player in my opinion, and he bounced back with a superb individual solo effort to put Brazil 2-0 up in this game, and the team goals either side of that effort were really great to watch. No, Austin?
They really were, and it was Paulinho again. It was Paulinho who had the hat trick against Uruguay last week, and then he came out and had a pair of just brilliant assists. And Paulinho is one of those players that Chichi has really gotten to, and he's a player that Chichi trusts. Playing in China, not a lot of managers would probably trust a player like Paulinho, or even Renato Augusto, who's paired with him in the midfield. But those two have been very, very solid under Chichi, and Paulinho was fantastic in this match. Casemiro, fantastic as well, in Chichi's favored 4-1-4-1. As that one defensive midfielder, he has been nothing short of brilliant in that tactic, and that's been great to see. And credit goes as well to Fagner, the right back for Brazil. The only change made, Dani Alves, was suspended. Fagner, the Corinthians man, playing at the Arena Corinthians in Sao Paulo for his former Corinthians manager, Chichi. A very Corinthians flavor to this match for Brazil. Certainly a lot of connections with the manager, and then of course with Renato Augusto, Paulinho, Marquinhos, Fagner, etc. Fagner played really well, I thought, at right back, and I would not be opposed to seeing him start there over Dani Alves. I know Dani Alves has the bigger name. He's been shaky at points on their Chichi. So I think that's a position that is certainly up in the air as Brazil starts this quest towards Russia. Now that they officially know that they'll be there, they can take a long look at that. And they've got over a year to figure out how they actually want to set up once they get there. And so I think that's certainly something. Simon, for Paraguay, it was always going to be a tough task on the road against the Brazilian side that is still yet to lose a home World Cup qualifier ever. I thought they were all right at points in the first half. I thought they made Brazil's task difficult. This is maybe a different match if Derlis Gonzalez takes an early chance. He was one-on-one with Alisson and completely sent it wide, didn't even put it on target. For Paraguay, again, it was always going to be a difficult task, and now they've got four matches to try and drag themselves into that playoff spot. They're 4 points back.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be tricky for Paraguay. Again, it's amazing the transformation of Brazil. It just, coming into this game, nobody could really see a way of Paraguay winning. It's the difference between the Chiche and what he's done compared to Dunga is just amazing. Dunga made managing Brazil look like the hardest job in the world, whereas Chiche makes it look so easy. You know, we've got great players, we just play great football, we'll just win easy. It's just, the transformation is incredible. And as you mentioned, yeah, you know, using his formation, using the players he trusts, you know, working, having that solid base, and then allowing players, you know, like Neymar, supporting players like Neymar and Coutinho and some of the attacking options to really, really thrive. It's going to be difficult for Paraguay. I think on paper, they probably look slightly off the top five or six teams. They've had good games and they've had not so good games. This game completely just went up with the script. I think there, you know, obviously there's a penalty save and they had some good moments for Paraguay. But yeah, I just think Brazil did what Brazil have been doing, and that was always going to be enough on the night.
I think the one of the things that I appreciate so much about Chichi is, as you said, he has his system and he also has his players. The difficult part of managing Brazil is you have so many talented options to choose from. And I think it's probably fair to say that if you were to line up the best outfield players of Brazil on sheer talent, Paulinho and Renato Augusto probably wouldn't be close to the top 10. But here they are starting in this midfield because they know how to play Chichi's system, because they fit well with the other players, and because they've been great at it. And I think that's what's made a lot of this transformation for Brazil, is they bought into a system, they're playing players in that system, and that is what has allowed them to flourish and to play so well. So certainly give Chichi credit for what he's been able to do with Paulinho and Renato Augusto, and also what he's been able to do for Neymar. The Neymar under Chichi looks far different than the Neymar who was playing under Dunga, who was struggling, you know, certainly felt like he was asked to do a whole lot. And that hasn't seemed the case. The football has really seemed to come for him. And 8 out of 8 for anybody in the South American qualifiers is certainly pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think these players who enable the players around them to play their best football are so important. With Colombia, I mentioned Carlos Sanchez is the destroyer, you know, the high profile, you know, tough tackling, athletic destroyer. But Colombia looks so much better having Abel Aguila alongside him, who did the simple things well, did his job, supported Sanchez as the main, you know, Sanchez being the main defensive player in the midfield. Aguila really supported that, picking up the loose balls. And then on possession, he played it simple. So I think, you know, as you mentioned, Paulinho, Renato Augusto, they really enable the players around them to, you know, they support in defense, they help launch the attacks. I think these players are really, really important, kind of the unsung hero, both in terms of defense and attack, someone who can enable the players around them and support the players around them doing their job really well. So, yeah, you know, I think those are the key players. It's very strange to think of Brazil and picking out kind of workmen, midfielders who do their job well, but those have really helped transform Brazil and given a good platform for the more exuberant, creative players around them.
You certainly have to be impressed by what Paulinho has been able to do. As you said, he is more of an unsung player, but a hat trick and a pair of beautiful assists will certainly get you a little more attention, even if you are playing your football in China. Nico, for you, is there anything that you'd like to add on this match before we head to the final one?
No, I think that Brazil are clear candidates for winning the World Cup. That's all I have to say. They've been amazing. We all know Chichi. I suffered in back in Corinthians, so I know him very well. I know his methods, and I know that he's a man who knows how to win and who's not afraid of switching things up like he did in the middle with Brazil and all that thing that he does with switching the armband between different players. I think that he has brought a breath of fresh air to the Brazilian national team.
Nico, I think you bring up a good point with the captain's armband. Neymar was named captain of Brazil. Wasn't quite sure if he was fit for that role under Dunga. That's a very heavy situation for Chich to come into. And the way that he handled it was so brilliant because it wasn't, we're stripping Neymar of the captain's armband and giving it to X. It was, no, we're going to rotate it around and everybody's going to wear it. And so far in his 8 matches, I believe 8 different players have gotten to wear that. And that's just a fantastic show of the man manager that Chichi is as well. And I think that can sometimes get lost. Yes, Brazil are playing brilliant football. Yes, they've won 8 out of 8. But he's also gotten all of these guys to buy in, and there's this camaraderie, community feel to it that under Dunga simply wasn't there for Brazil. And that's been what's been impressive to me to see.
Well, I think that's very important because the mental aspect plays a great role nowadays in football. Look at Argentina, for instance. We've lost 3 consecutive finals, and we don't seem to find a solution to our sadness and our underachieving nature. Brazil, well, they conceded 10 goals in 2 matches in their own World Cup at home. How much has it been? Like 2 years after that? 3 years maybe? They're back on track and they're playing amazing football. This Brazil side looks very threatening to me. That's why I say that. I rate them very high in the chances of winning the World Cup next year.
It's certainly been phenomenal to see for Brazil. This turnaround, as we've all said, has been very, very impressive. And a tip of the cap to Chichi for sure. We'll head to the final match of this round here. It was a 2-1 win for Peru against Uruguay. That makes it an empty window for Uruguay as well. 4 points for Peru. Has them on 18, 4 back of the playoff spot, and still in with a shout. They also still have a home match against Bolivia. Simon, I'll come to you first on this one. Uruguay, again, blowing a lead. They were 1-0 up in this. Paulo Guerreiro got one back for Peru fairly quickly. And then Flores scoring for Peru in the second half. For Peru, they're still in with a puncher's chance. For Uruguay, it kind of feels like we've been here before. They could be destined for another playoff, which would approximately be their 4th or 5th in a row now in World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, it was a game I enjoyed. I think the teams set up quite differently, had different approaches. Uruguay obviously have Cavani and Suarez up front, which are 2 excellent striking options. Behind that, they were very well organized. The defense, obviously, is always organized, always tough, with Godin organizing things in the middle. So basically, the game kind of opened up with Uruguay looking to counter, looking to get the ball to Cavani and Suarez up front. And they were slightly isolated at times, but if you're going to have 2 strikers isolated, Cavani and Suarez is just about as good as it gets for them. So they were always dangerous on the counter. They obviously have some quality in midfield. Carlos Sanchez is a very good player. So Uruguay was set with a solid base and some good strikers and the midfield trying to link between them. Whereas Peru played some really, really good football. I was very impressed by Peru, passing the ball really well. Cristian Cueva is a player I like in the midfield. André Carrillo is a very good winger for Peru. And Paulo Guerreiro was excellent up front, was a real leader, proper number 9, played really, really well. With the game, obviously, Sanchez gave Uruguay the lead. Suarez with a really nice pass across the box to Sanchez, who volleyed the ball down into the ground, and it bounced up over the defenders who were rushing back. Really nice finish. Peru, again, will be disappointed to have such a big lapse. Sanchez was really wide open with the opportunity, but it was really well taken. Like, Uruguay might be able to hold on with their tough defending to keep the 3 points, but Peru continues to play their nice football, had a really good game. Paulo Guerreiro latched onto a long pass, headed it down past Godin, and then slipped it into the near post. A really great pass from deep and a really nice, tidy finish. And then Peru kept pressing, and in the second half, they took the lead. Carrillo stood the defender up, crossed it in, and Edison Flores put Peru ahead. So I was impressed by Peru. It may be a little late to have found this kind of form, but they had a really good game. They definitely outplayed Uruguay. Uruguay were compact and solid and good on the break, but I was very much impressed by Peru in this game, and we'll see how they do, but they've definitely looked to have found some good form on the basis of this week's game.
Adam, something that we were upset about in these last string of qualifiers was the fact that seemingly four of them took place at the exact same time. That wasn't the case in this round. And for me, there's always something fun about finishing the day with these matches in Lima. For whatever reason, Peru always seems to play exciting matches when they're in this final window and kind of closing up. And this one was really no different. As Simon said, it was a really enjoyable watch between these two.
Yeah, definitely. It was a really thunderous encounter, I'd describe it as. And it would never really cross the line to being sort of a dirty match, which is nice to see. It was just a really good game of football. I think it was arguably kind of the best game of the round. Two sides really going at it for 90 minutes. Like Simon mentioned, with like two very different approaches. Peru played brilliantly. They continue to improve and improve under Gareca's management. And hopefully he will stay on, even if Peru do miss out, as I think they've got a lot of potential here. I mentioned on the previous pod, much to the dismay of Jesse, that Peru shouldn't lose hope, even if they go a goal down in this one. And, well, that's exactly how it unfolded, didn't it? So Uruguay heading into this had blown leads in three of their previous four fixtures. You can now make that four in five. As Simon mentioned, Carlos Sanchez gave Uruguay the lead. That was his second chance of the match. He had a decent one before that. He also had a couple after that as well. Chances seemed to fall to him instead of Suarez or Cavani. But I think Peru can be proud of how they dealt with Suarez and Cavani tonight. Suarez has given them a torrid time in the past, but they dealt with him really well. One more thing on Uruguay quickly. Diego Godin had a really bad week, and he had a poor game against Chile as well back in November. I thought he looked a bit weak and off his game against Brazil last week as well, and the same last night. It was really kind of a trio of below par performances from him. And you know, if he's not at their best, then I don't think Uruguay are. And as I mentioned the other day, this Uruguay team just don't seem to have resilience that you usually associate with them. One player I do want to point out is Edison Flores, who got the winner in this, a much deserved winner as well, not just for the team, but for his impressive display in the midfield. He especially stepped up to the plate when Christian Cueva had to go off fairly early in this one. And it was Flores who really got the rewards for his hard work and game intelligence with the winner. And yeah, it's great to see this Peru side still in with a chance. They're on the same amount of points as Paraguay, but you know, if you had to back one of those two sides to maybe sneak into that playoff spot, then I think you'd have to say Peru at the moment. They're on the up. They're probably a little bit gutted that they have to wait 5 months to play the next one. Because after a performance and a win like that, you know, you want another game quickly.
I think we're all gutted that the next CONMEBOL qualifier isn't for another 5 months. It's getting to the point where everything is so dramatic now at this point, and everything is so tight that to have to wait that long is certainly going to be a bit frustrating. For you, Nico, what did you make of this one? Peru getting themselves back in the conversation. Uruguay at a point now where nothing can be taken for granted for them. You could see a whole host of different finishes for them. What did you make of this match?
First of all, I'd like to praise Paolo Guerrero, whom I think has been one of the best South American strikers for years now. One of our most important commentators on Fox Sports said the other day that Paolo Guerrero is not praised as one of the world's best strikers just because he is Peruvian, and I think that he is so right. Paolo Guerrero deserves more recognition because he has been so good ever since he was at Corinthians and now at Flamengo and for the national team. That guy is always good. I'm
going to slightly disagree with you here, and it is a controversial viewpoint and something I've had arguments with many people on Twitter. I think on his day, he certainly is one of the best strikers in the world. There's no doubt in that. But for me, he's not quite consistent enough. And quite often, I see him have a great game like he did last night. And then in the very next one, maybe sometimes just a few days later, as we quite often see with these World Cup qualifiers, he goes missing. And I feel that's why maybe he hasn't had a more star-studded career.
Maybe I got ahead of myself there. And also, it's fair to say that he is not the most disciplined player on earth. But overall, yes, you are right. However, Guerrero was very good, and hopefully we'll see more of him. I'd like to bring up something that you mentioned, Adam, on Twitter about it being a shame that Combo only gets 4 plus a playoff spot for the World Cup, because analysing all these matches, we certainly agree that certain nations deserve a spot in the World Cup, like Ecuador or Peru. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I just feel that giving the quality here in South America, I think just an extra spot or spot and a half to CONMEBOL will certainly improve the spectacle of the World Cup, really. Yeah, I think if you gave 6 places to South America and maybe take one off of CONCACAF, for example, I think that's fair given the strength and depth in both of those regions. Yeah, I don't know what you guys think, Austin, Simon.
Well, I there was talk about perhaps merging the two regions. It would be interesting if you stuck all of the teams together, whether the US and Mexico would qualify. It would be interesting to see. Obviously, it would make it much more complicated. Yeah, I think it's difficult. If there's still just the 10 teams, it may be tricky to make the case that most of them qualify for the World Cup. That would be my only objection. In terms of quality of play and in terms of making an impact on the tournament, I definitely think there are at least seven teams in the South American qualifying that would do that, would improve a World Cup, would have a big impact on the World Cup. And we've seen at previous tournaments that the South American teams perform very well. Even countries which are perhaps less well respected in Europe, countries like Ecuador have performed well at tournaments. Obviously Chile have always done well, Uruguay. I think in terms of quality, I definitely think so. It would improve the level of the tournament, but I can understand the objection to letting most of the teams in the continent go to the World Cup. But it would be interesting if you stuck all the CONCACAF and CONMEBOL teams together. It would be interesting to see which 8 emerge from that qualifying, if that were to happen. Obviously, it would ruin the most fun qualifying section in world football. But it would be interesting to see what would happen in that case.
That is one point. You know, we wouldn't have quite such a dramatic World Cup qualifying series if 6 did qualify. But, you know, just looking at the FIFA rankings now, I think sometimes they can be useful, sometimes they're nonsense. But Peru, for example, you know, are now in 18th position in that, and they'll probably go up further as well after this round of fixtures with that draw in Venezuela and a win at home against Uruguay. So, but yeah, I think there's, 6 South American sides inside the first 22. So, yeah, that kind of backs up my argument a little bit. But, you know, it is a World Cup, it is a World game, and you do need to distribute those spots out fairly.
I think you could convince me to put it to 5.5 and give CONMEBOL one more guaranteed spot and then have that 6th place team go to a playoff. I think that might be the best distribution of it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, that's fair enough.
But as you said, the 4.5 certainly does add to the drama. You know, from where we're sitting at now, it's going to make for an incredible finish to this World Cup qualifying campaign. And let's get into that as we close up the pod here. Here's what we know for sure in CONMEBOL. Brazil are going to Russia. They've mathematically qualified. There's no scenario in which they do not qualify for the World Cup. Bolivia and Venezuela will not be going to Russia. There is still mathematically a scenario, I believe, in which Bolivia could get there, but it's not going to happen. Venezuela have been mathematically eliminated. From then on, 2nd through 8th, all of those teams could still consider themselves with a chance. In 2nd, Colombia have 24. Uruguay and Chile in third and fourth place, respectively, are both on 23 points. Argentina are in fifth on 22, which is the final playoff spot. Ecuador sit 2 points back of them in sixth. And then both Peru and Paraguay are in seventh and eighth, respectively, on 18 points. Four matches for all of these squads left. Simon, I'm going to come to you first. We know Brazil is going to Russia. Who do you think is going to be joining them?
Okay, so for Colombia, I think they're looking good. They've got four games left, so they're playing Venezuela away, which could be tricky, but I think Colombia can go into that and hopefully get some points. You know, Colombia. They should go on.
Sorry, Simon. Colombia don't have a good record there, though, do they?
And even when Venezuela weren't very good, Colombia didn't have a great record, and now Venezuela are looking better and keen to kind of make an impression before the end of qualifying. I think it will be tricky for Colombia to go to Venezuela. I think you're right. But I think that's a game that they can look at. If they play in the similar way they did to Ecuador, counter Venezuela, maybe encouraged to attack a little bit more, I think that could play into Colombia. So I think they can get something from that Venezuela. Then after that, they've got Brazil at home, which, again, it's going to be a big game. I think it'll be tricky for Colombia. Brazil have been so good, but maybe it's one that they can look to upset the odds. Then they go to Paraguay at home. Sorry, they play at home against Paraguay. So that needs to be 3 points. That has to be, of the four games, that has to be the one they definitely get 3 points from to secure their qualification. And then hopefully they'll be in a good position for the final game, which is away in Peru, which again could be very tricky, especially with Peru in contention. So looking at the second place team at the moment, Colombia, I think get the 3 points against Paraguay, get something from Venezuela, and then hopefully get something against Brazil at home, and we should be there because the Peru game is going to be difficult. So I'm really hoping for Colombia's sake, for my sake as well, that Colombia can tie things up before they go to that away game in Peru, which I think will be very, very difficult. So I think Colombia should be okay. I think there's enough points there that they can pick up, and especially when it's so competitive, you know, teams win and lose, you know, all the time. Uruguay, I think, is going to be a bit more tricky. Let's have a look. So they've got Argentina at home next, which is going to be a very interesting game, a big, big game for both teams. Argentina should probably not have Messi for that game as well, and they've been very bad without Messi. So I think Uruguay will look to get the 3 points for that one. Then they're playing away at Paraguay. Again, not going to be easy, but they could look to get a win there. Away at Venezuela, again, not easy, but as far as away games go, that's one of the easier ones for them. And then finally at home to Bolivia. So I think Uruguay, although they haven't been playing as well, as you mentioned, with Godin not looking so strong, I think they will definitely get 6 points plus from those games, which should be enough, I would suggest. Chile have been looking really good with the games they have left. They've got home against Paraguay next, which again you would think that they should be able to pick up the win. Then they're away in Bolivia, which will be very tricky. Then at home against Ecuador, and then away against Brazil in the final game. So I think I can see them picking up six points there, maybe. I think so. I think, yeah, it's going to be very tight. Argentina, we'll have to see how they do. They've got Peru at home, they've got Venezuela at home, they've got Uruguay away. And the final game, they're away at Ecuador. So, yeah, it was going to be tricky for Argentina as well. So, oh, I can't tell. What do you guys think? I can see all of those things picking up 6 points, 6-7 points each. Yeah. Those three.
I'm confident that Chile will get 7 to 9 points in their remaining four matches. I think they will beat either Paraguay or Ecuador at home, probably both. And I'm fairly confident they get at least a point in La Paz. As I mentioned earlier, Chile have an excellent record in La Paz. They usually play that game really well. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Chile are going to make it now. I think Uruguay will still manage to hold on to a top five place. I think Colombia should just about do it. I think what's really interesting of these left, I think Ecuador's and Argentina's situation depends on if they change their manager. If they stay with their current managers, I think, well, Ecuador just won't make it under Quinteros, definitely. And Argentina under Bowser could be in real trouble. And why I say that, Peru have got Bolivia at home next. Argentina go to Uruguay away. And if Peru win and Argentina don't win, that means Peru go to Argentina with that chance of leapfrogging Argentina with just two games to go. And that looks to me the potentially the massive clash left in this World Cup qualifying series. There's a few big ones, but that Argentina-Peru game in Argentina could be huge. And the other one, of course, is possibly the last couple of games as well, the last day of the games where Colombia play Peru. That could be interesting if Peru continue their good form and Colombia slip up away to Venezuela, for example. Peru still might be with a slight chance of catching Colombia. And of course, Argentina having to go to Quito, the altitude again there. You know, we saw how poorly Argentina performed in the altitude away in La Paz, and maybe having to avoid defeat or something in Ecuador. That would be a very tricky task for them. No, Nico?
Yeah, I think that Argentina has no time for speculating at this moment. We now have 5 months for Bauza to tinker the formation and to think about replacements and what he's going to do. Well, the game against Uruguay, you can't really tell because both teams have been unpredictable, haven't they? So let's suppose that Argentina magically get a point out of that one. I can fancy Bauza getting wins from the games against Peru and Venezuela. Well, Venezuela for obvious reasons. Argentina is not superior at the moment, but we'll see in 5 months once we get all the situation sorted. And hopefully we'll get Messi's sanction reduced by appealing at FIFA. Against Peru, I don't know, it's hard to tell. Peru have been playing very well. And like you mentioned, it will depend on whether Peru get to that stage with the chance of leapfrogging Argentina. Then, as we are battling shoulder to shoulder with Chile, I think that Chile still have a game in La Paz, so that gives us a slight window of opportunity for them to lose points. I fancy Peru getting in the World Cup, but I think that Ecuador will miss it because this run of form will not be easily reverted. I can fancy Colombia as well getting the second place ahead of Uruguay.
I think what sticks out for me here is the run-in that Ecuador has is very difficult for a team that started so well. And they're going to have to close with. They go to Brazil, which is going to be a difficult task. They host that Peru team that we've been so impressed with. And then on the final two match days, they go to Chile and then host Argentina. Not an easy match in there for Ecuador. And that's what's going to make it difficult, I think, for them. For Paraguay, it's really tough, I think, to see them getting back in this. They still have to go to Chile, which will be difficult, host Uruguay, and then go to Colombia, and then they close with Venezuela at home. So there's really, I think it's going to be very difficult for Paraguay to get back in this. It's Peru, I think, is the team that if anybody's going to make a run to upset the current top five, I think it's Peru that would get in there. And as you said, Adam, that Peru-Argentina match on the second to last match day could prove to be huge. And the fact that Peru is the only one of these teams still that has that home banker to Bolivia, I guess Uruguay does as well. Both of those, I think that's going to be a huge match for both of those teams to feel pretty darn confident that they're going to have at least 3 points from that match, especially for Uruguay on the last match day. You know, when Argentina have to go to Quito, when Colombia have to go to Lima, for Uruguay to be able to know that they have Bolivia coming to Montevideo, that could be the difference between either qualifying straight or having that tricky playoff or getting into that playoff or not qualifying at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree. I think Peru are definitely, I mean, Peru could potentially win the last four games, I think. They'd have to play well. They've got Bolivia at home. Then they go away to Ecuador, which will be very tricky. But again, if Ecuador keep playing as they've been playing, then maybe not as tricky as we once would have thought, you know, a year ago. Then they play away at Argentina, which I think, again, if Argentina don't get the results they need in those next two games, then they're going to be feeling the pressure a lot. Obviously, they're playing away in Uruguay, which will be tricky. then they're playing at home against Venezuela. And obviously, you would expect Argentina to win at home against Venezuela, but that's the kind of game that can really upset things. You know, if they do fail to get the win there, I think it'll really knock them off in terms of the final games.
Sorry, I just want to say something. Besides, like you say, Venezuela would have nothing to lose. So the same as Bolivia, what they did a couple of days ago, they will just field the best players and hope to get a win. You can't speculate against a team that is desperate for beating you because they have nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly. And I think with Argentina, without Messi, looking a little bit shaky, kind of going in the wrong direction, I think Peru could potentially build some momentum with that home game against Bolivia. Then perhaps if they get the result away in Ecuador, then they go to Argentina in the penultimate game. I think that, again, as you said, will be a key game. With Peru then facing Colombia, who hopefully will have qualified or be looking in a solid position by the final game, whereas Argentina face Ecuador, who may still well be in the mix. I think it's still a lot to play with, but I think I think Argentina and Uruguay are going and looking less secure. I think Chile have picked things up, so I think Argentina and Uruguay are looking down and Peru looking up. Ecuador, again, I think you're right in terms of they need to make some changes because things have definitely fallen off recently. But if they do that, then they're still in with a shout. But yeah, for me, Peru are definitely the ones to watch, the ones who are going to be putting pressure on Argentina at a time when they're looking a little bit unsure, definitely going to be missing Messi for at least one game. So yeah, for me, that's going to be the interesting narrative, watching Peru potentially continue to rise and watching the pressure pile on Argentina, who need to get some results as we come towards the end of qualifying.
Yeah, the fact that Uruguay's goal difference as well is +9. You know, Chile's is +5, so Chile could potentially make that up. Colombia's is +3, so unlikely they'll make that up to Uruguay. And Argentina's is just +1. So if, you know, Uruguay already have a point more than Argentina, and if you add on that sort of goal difference as well, you know, that's like an extra point if they finish level. So, yeah, I'm confident that the current top five will probably stay the same. Certainly the top four. I think the dodgy one is Argentina. That match against Peru, I'm really looking forward to. Just a shame we have to wait so long for it.
It really is. We've run on our time here. It's been a fascinating discussion. It goes without saying that the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers certainly save international windows. I know that there's some pushback against them in Europe. You know, your club's not playing. It's not really fun to watch your national team play Armenia again in World Cup qualifying, or San Marino, or whoever else is taking part in UEFA qualifying. But CONMEBOL qualifiers certainly do save these international windows, and it's going to be a dramatic race to the finish here. Not much is known at this point, and I think that's what's going to make these final four match days so entertaining. But we will wrap up here. We'll head around the table. Everyone will let you know where you can find them on Twitter, and we'll also let you know anything that they've been working on that you should definitely check out. And Nico, I'll start with you. I know you have a pretty good piece out on Messi's suspension.
Yeah, just published fresh out of the oven. My opinions on Messi's sanction and all the conspiracy theories as well, all wrapped up in a beautiful document published on Futebol Cidade. So yeah, go check that out. You'll enjoy it, I can assure that. And you can always find me on Twitter at @Miramont_Nico. I tweet about all sorts of stuff. So if that suits you, you're welcome to join me.
And Simon, where can we follow the quest of Simon Olgino as he tries to qualify for the Copa Sulamericana?
Yeah, so our team's in the league, and you know, occasionally I'll post an occasional free kick or moment of brilliance from the Envigado player manager Simon Edwards,
the number 10, of course,
number 10, captain, kit man, manager. I need to continue to justify my selection. It's one of the challenges of being player manager. You think it would be easy to get yourself in the team, but the problem is you're always self-conscious. You know, I know I deserve to be in the team, but I need to make sure that there's no questions asked. So, you know, you can catch all my highlights on my Twitter, but also talking about Colombian football. And if someone tells you that the reason Argentina lose games in the South American qualifying is because they're terrible, Sometimes they are terrible. But you know what else? South American teams are really good. So don't believe your European podcast when they just tell you, forget the opposition, it's all Argentina's fault. You know, come on, give some credit to the other teams in South America. There's more than just Brazil and Argentina. And, you know, you need to make sure you keep your eye on the South American qualifying to see all the quality. 10 interesting teams down here. So, yeah, give some respect.
And Adam, for you, where can the listeners find you on Twitter?
Yeah, they can find me at Kanija Scores. I certainly echo Simon's thoughts there on the South American teams. And yeah, I'm always posting about South American football, Chilean football, and also my club team here, Arica, and also my club team back in England, Norwich City. Interesting times at both of those clubs at the moment. So I'm looking forward to seeing how the end of the season pans out.
And you can find me on Twitter at Austin_James906. The Brazilian state leagues are immersively coming to a conclusion. We're into the knockout rounds, which is when it kind of gets exciting, when you get a couple of big clubs going up against each other. So that means that the Brazilian league is right around the corner, which is certainly exciting. A lot of CONMEBOL World Cup qualifier coverage from me. Again, as we've said multiple times on this podcast, a shame we have to wait until the end of August for this to kick back up, because it's certainly reaching that crescendo for sure. We love bringing you the coverage. We do our best to make it as comprehensive and as informative as possible. Check out all our other shows, which do the same for the various leagues and regions that they do cover. But we are out of time for tonight. So until next time, all that's left for me to say is good night and thanks for listening.